And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Mantra Meditation Hour on CITR 101.9 FM with your congenial host, Raghunath.
Show, you're listening to Mantra on CATR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Raghunath and I'll be here for the next hour playing various mantra based music kirtan. This week is jam packed. It's the second part of the Wanderlust Festival special. Wanderlust is a yoga music festival that travels around and was in Whistler a few weeks ago. Last week we covered we did the first part. This is the last part of our coverage. We're there doing interviews and taking part in the festival, checking things out. We're going to start off with Krishna Das. I'm going to hear from one track, Heart, a track entitled Devi Puja, which is an offering to the Divine Mother. Specifically in this song, Durga Devi, and begins with Om Shri Matre Namaha, which is an offering to the mother. And in here, one mantra you're going to hear, one verse, Om Sava Mangala Mangalaye Shive Savata Sadike Sharanye Triambike Gauri Narayani Namostute. So Narayani is another name for Durga. Rough translation, O Gauri Ma, Gauri means golden. O Gauri Ma, consort of Shiva, you who bestows auspiciousness in all and fulfills everyone's wishes, I offer myself before you, take me under your care. So, Sharanye is asking for shelter. In every tradition, you see different versions of the Divine Feminine. And for the followers of Shiva, this would be Durga Devi or Shakti. So here's Krishna Das. You're going to hear an interview with him that was done at the festival. It's going to be, I'm going to mix it into this track after a few minutes' time. And then we're going to take a quick break before we get into the rest of the interviews. So hope you're doing good. You're listening to Mantra on CATI in Vancouver. Here's Krishna Das.
2 years we've been at all of them, from Vermont, Colorado, Squaw Valley, and here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was just mentioning earlier about how Jim Wilson, who was like worked with you on One Track Heart, and a good friend of yours,
Jim,
I believe.
Without Jim, the One Track Heart wouldn't have got made, because we worked together and he created these loops that I then sang over, and that we created the form for the songs. You know, it was my first CD. I don't know what I was doing. So Jim, of course, had a lot of experience. So we created these song forms with loops. And then we recorded live instruments also. But without Jim's help at the very beginning, we would have never, I don't know when or how that first CD would have been made. He was a really deep guy, you know, he was really deep. He was always hearing stuff, listening inside. We had a really good relationship. We always wanted to work together again, but both of us were so busy that it never happened.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I had a strong desire to sing. It was that I had an epiphany one day in my apartment in New York, at the time I had an apartment, and I realized that, and I wasn't doing very well in life at the time. I was pretty depressed and very unhappy, and I realized if I didn't sing with people, that I would never be able to clean out the dark corners in my own heart. And this was the only rope that was going to be thrown to this particular drowning man. So if I didn't do it, it wouldn't happen. So it was hard to force myself to start doing it. It was very difficult at first.
How did you actually connect with Sharon Gannon?
Well, Jai Utal had come out with his band, I think about 6 months before, and I had gone to Jiva Mukti to hang out and hear him, because I know Jai from India 20 years ago. Or it was 20 years ago then.
Yeah.
Now it's 100 years ago. So I met them, and I knew them. And so when I needed a place to sing with people, it's just natural I would ask them. Before, but yeah, back in when I went to India in 1970, and I had been doing meditation and yoga and stuff since probably 65, 66. But then I met Ram Dass in 1968. He had just returned from his first trip to India, and he just was soaked in Maharaji, Indian Kuroli Baba, in his presence. And I got such a strong hit that as soon as I could, about a year later, I went to India to be with him.
You spent some time with him in India. And
I was there for almost 3 years.
Wow. That's a long time to be in India for a Westerner.
It wasn't long enough. You know, I had planned never to come back. Yeah. I never was going to come back to America. When I left the States,
yeah,
I thought I would never come back. I gave everything I had away. I sold my car, my record collection. I gave my jeans away. You know, I mean, I was gone.
Yeah.
But 2.5 years later, Maharaji, he sent me back, actually. He told me to go home. He said I had work to do there. I had attachment here. I had work on it.
So where were you when you were in India with him? Where were you staying? Like, what part of India?
It was North India. Mostly in the state of Uttar Pradesh.
Was he in Vrindavan? Is that where
he has a temple in Vrindavan. He has temples in the mountains. Yeah. He has temples in Lucknow, yeah, Kanpur, all around. Yeah.
Did you spend much time in Vrindavan?
I did spend a lot of time in Vrindavan with him.
It's quite an amazing place.
Especially in those days. It was still very quiet.
Yeah.
It was like a little village in those days.
Yeah, this is what I heard from people that were there back then. Just like, like it's a very different place now.
Very different now, but still it's Krishna's place. He's all over the place. It's fantastic. Devi, Durge Devi, Namostute. First thing is that when you do meet a teacher that you connect with, it gives you great confidence in your life. You begin to feel differently about your life, that you are on a path and that there is something to find, because you see the teacher must have achieved something himself, otherwise you wouldn't be attracted to him. So you begin to get an understanding of what life might be about. And that gives you tremendous self-confidence, even though you might be all screwed up anyway, you know, in your head, and you were full of a lot of self-hatred and anger and greed and shame and guilt and all the stuff that we love so much. We may have all that, but still underneath all that, or around all that, we still have a sense of a path. And that's that kind of confidence, or if you want to use one of these words that Westerners hate, faith. That faith, that understanding that there really is something to find in life, it changes the way you go through your life. It just does. Everything is not just for nothing anymore. You can't even when you don't see where you're going, you still know you're going. So it makes a big difference. And of course, one of the ways people get confidence or faith is they meet a teacher and then they feel better about themselves. But let me also say that they always say in all the teachings that Guru, God, and Self are one. There's no Guru outside of you. Because the Guru knows he's not outside of you. You see? we don't know that. And so sometimes you might run into one if it's in your best interest. The thing you have to understand about the universe, you don't have to understand.
Yeah.
But the way it looks is that, looks to me, is that everything that happens is in some way in our own best interests to help us. It might be a terrible thing that we have to deal with, but in some way, there's not, it's not that there's no reason for things. Everything that happens to us can be turned into a teaching and can be taken as a teaching to learn more about yourself and become a better human being. And once you get on that program, then you can digest anything. But if you don't have that program, then it's like getting, you know, like playing in traffic. You get hit by a car and you don't know why. But once you have that program that everything is a part of the path, even if it's almost undealable with, there is a slight difference because you know you're on a path. So with the chanting and stuff like that, there's nothing more fun than chanting, more easier to do than chanting. And yet chanting is a very subtle, powerful spiritual practice that transmits something, something to the heart of people. Whether they know what it is or not, they're still getting something out of it. And I think that's why it catches, it's, so many people like to do it.
Yeah. Bhavishyate na sanshayo.
We're going to take a break with a few public service announcements.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the commercial drive area at
Audio Pile, Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, and the People's Co-op Bookstore.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
With the vast amount of changes happening in the world, it's almost impossible to get a clear picture of what's really going on.
We are trapped within the logic of capitalism, leaving us unable to imagine what comes next.
The Extra Environmentalist brings the perspectives of people who can see the whole picture and are ready for whatever comes our way.
Tune in to the Extra Environmentalist every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
This is the viewpoint that makes all places the same to you.
So the next section, we're going to hear from yoga teacher Clara Roberts-Oss. And also we're going to hear some music in the background during these interviews from none other than Todd Boston, from his release Touched by the Sun. He also was performing at Wonderless Festival. This is the second part of the coverage we're doing here on Mantra Radio. The interview, Clara starts off with her reading from a quote by Hafiz, the poet Hafiz, that was written on her yoga mat bag. I asked her to just give it a read. It's a nice short poem. And then we get into other aspects, other parts of the interview.
Now is the time for the world to know that every thought and action is sacred. This is the time for us to compute the impossibility that there is anything but grace. Now is the season to know that everything we do is sacred. To me, I came to movement as for me, it's the way that I commune with the divine. And then as I started to do that more and more, it kind of spills out into the rest of your life. And so to me, vinyasa or yoga or the asana practice is a moving prayer. That's the way that I think of it, is that I'm not as articulate with my words as I am with my body, and I find that actual movements are a form of poetry. And the poetry to me, as we were just talking about Rumi and Hafez, and to me those are their bhaktas. Everything, like my favorite thing about Hafez is that he believes that every opportunity, as I said at the end of class, is like an opportunity to get closer to God. And that everything, and if we start to think of it that way, everything we do is a form of devotion, and this is where the moving prayer comes in. And so even washing my dishes, or walking outside, or looking at somebody, or, you know, taking anything in is like this celebration of our connection to something that is greater than us.
Big support with other people.
Yeah, I mean, it's been proven that if you go deeper, dive deeper, if you do it in sangha, if you do it in group, in community. And so that's exactly what you're saying. It's like with us, it's the same. To me, it's the same with mantra. If I do recite mantra in a community, it's like, I mean, and it can be that intense on my own, but I find that the vibration of all of us together, and a reminding that the interconnectedness, I feel like it becomes so simple where you're like, yes, like, I feel it. It's an actual, like, the first community of people, I'm from New York City originally, and my first community was the Jivamukti community, and they chant for 20 minutes in every single class, at the beginning of every single class. And so, and then I practiced with other studios, and they did the same thing. I think it's integral.
It reaches a certain part.
It's one of the aspects of the practice to me. I think that mantra, meditation, asana, right, and then bhakta are all aspects that make a well-rounded practice. Not necessarily all in one shot, though that can be amazing too, but
what is the role of breath in yoga practice? Like, how do you? I mean, that's a big question, really. But what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts, as I said at the end, is that it's the anchor. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing for me is that the other thing I love to say is that the breath is my dance partner, and we together are creating this dance of life, mm-hmm. this dance of practice, and so it is, and to remember that it is actually the lead in the dance. So to really listen and allow, and that's what I love about vinyasa specifically, is that we allow that to move us forward into the next pose, or, you know, to get deeper into it, and to, the biggest thing is to slow down around that. So to remember for it to guide us versus.
And that's kind of the role of the beloved as well, actually, is that we're in a dance with the beloved.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I find that the breath to me can. This may sound strange. The breath to me is like my deepest, truest lover, mm-hmm. in that we commune together, right? And that's how I find the connection mm-hmm. to the divine.
And in regards to Wanderlust and festivals like it,
I think it's important. What it does is, to me, it raises all of our vibration over here, and so that when we go back to our communities, we are in a higher vibration, and I feel like with that we inspire those around us to do the same. I think it's really important for people to realize, specifically depending upon if they live in a small place that doesn't have a lot of it, when they come to these festivals, to realize that there are many like-minded people mm-hmm. who may not be part of their smaller community but are part of the global community. So in that way, I think it's beautiful, and it also allows people to try things that they wouldn't necessarily try.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I find that people are a lot more open at things like this, to try things that maybe they wouldn't necessarily do it in a quote-unquote public class at home.
Thank you. That was Clara Roberts Oz, currently listening to Todd Boston from Touched by the Sun. Track entitled Surya, with vocals performed by Sanatan Kaur. The next interview today is going to be with Ryan Leah of One Yoga for the People. He's involved in a lot of different projects, including Yoga for Youth, which he'll talk about during this interview, and has a couple of yoga centers, One Yoga centers in Saskatoon, also in Vancouver. First off, we're just going to hear from him speaking on philosophy as part of yoga practice.
You know, when I started in high school, I was doing meditation and studying Eastern religions and philosophy. And so that was always of interest to me before I even started doing the asana. And then once I really got into the asana, it made me even more interested, or reignited that interest in the Eastern ways of living. And so I feel like it's such a key part of the practice to explore those ways. So I think it kind of came to me before the poses, so thankfully they match so well together. Like, doing the poses helps the philosophy. If you do enough of the asana, it reveals the philosophy, I think, and then the philosophy really helps the asana. So it's almost, they complement each other so well. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the philosophy, lots of people don't recognize its importance. So I'm glad that you feel it.
Just what are you? What are your thoughts on that, like, in terms of, like, the aspect of devotion or bhakti in the complete practice?
Yeah, you know, it's a missing part of Krishnamacharya's teaching. He was like a devout practitioner, man, total bhakti. And I love it. It brings it to a whole nother level when people are offering up their practice to God or to the highest, you know. It just changes the whole deal. And it's nothing against yoga as a therapy. It's great if people can heal their back, like, thank God. Or, well, thank, like, you know? But with the bhakti, it really seems to move it to another vibration, I think. And I would have never said that when I just started, because I was afraid to chant, you know, and afraid to just let go. I do mantra meditation as much as I can, and I love chanting. I chant every morning, and before class I usually do a little prayer, sometimes with the group, sometimes on my own. But I really love Sanskrit, and I could be like George Harrison and John Lennon. One day they chanted for 24 hours straight. I heard Hare Krishna. So, yeah, I love it. I guess in the West it's an uncomfortable thing to really surrender to another person. And it's such a paradox, because these are humans, but they have so much divinity in them. So for me, as a teacher, as a practitioner, I'm always checking myself through my teachers.
And I haven't just taken on one, but I've taken on a few. And like Baron Baptiste is here. He's an amazing man. He's my teacher, you know. So if I'm struggling with something, or if I need more inspiration, or if I'm feel almost lost, I'll go to Baron, or I'll go to Father Joe or Eddie Modestini, like a few of these people who seem to, the yoga seems to be flowing through them. And so and to some people it's just having one guru is the way, and for me I find the teachings in my daughter, I find them in these teachers. But on the path of yoga, like for health, I really think it's important to have a teacher or a few teachers. And it's kind of like I feel like some schools and traditions become almost like fundamentalist religions. So it's a strange thing, you know, because I don't find fault with people who are just into one guru, but I also see the light in people who have a few, you know. So Danny Paradise, one of my really great teachers, said he's kind of like not into the guru system, but he said that these masters have the fire and they can light you up, but they can't keep you, like they can't, you have to keep the fire, tend the fire on your own eventually, and eventually your intuition or your connection to God is going to be your guide. And that's like Bob Marley, he's like, I consider him a guru, said everyone has a voice inside of them telling them the right road and the wrong road. It's just a matter of listening, you know. This thing about surrendering to a teacher, I have a teacher, he's a beautiful man, Father Joe Pereira. Like, he's got a foundation called Kripo, 52 centers teaching yoga principles for HIV, AIDS, drug abuse, alcohol. It's a long story, I'll abbreviate it. I was holding my headstand in the hot room for too long and I dehydrated my kidneys. Then I didn't see him until this class, and I was in child's pose and I hadn't talked to him or anything. He walked by and he goes, "Ryan, your kidneys are tight." And I hadn't told him or anything, right? So I thought it was brilliant that he, like, he's 36 year Iyengar teacher, he could see it, you know, and he could feel it, he's connected. And he said, he came and sat down on my back and he goes, "Surrender." And I tried my hardest, you know, to let go and to give myself to him. And I tried, and he goes, "That's defiance." And then he said, "Surrender." And then my body melted. It was really cool, and I just let go and gave my trust to him. So it's pretty beautiful if you can, like, open yourself up to these people who have gone through it before, who have done the work, you know. So I'm skeptical of, like, brand new systems without a lineage or without a guru. But I'm a brand new system. Skeptical of myself.
Ryan talks about one of his programs, Yoga for Youth.
Yeah, it's we try to get yoga to as many kids as we can, at risk, focused, but all schools, all youth centers, all detention centers, we're trying to get authentic yoga to them, like where it is doing the poses, but it is also a bit of the philosophy that they are powerful, like important beings, and that their voice does matter, and that they don't have to follow the crowds who are, like, whatever, acting violently or acting, like, you know, peer pressure. To give kids the power to choose to do or not to do is amazing. And I feel like these yoga tools can save a lot of kids from going down the wrong road, you know? So before they fall into addiction or into selling their bodies or whatever you know, whatever dangers are out there, that yoga might be able to give them the power to choose to be themselves and know that they don't have to be like the rest of society almost, because society is sometimes kind of crazy the way we are, you know. But I know when I was a kid, if I would have had some of these yoga tools, I could have like been free from lots of the suffering I went through.
So what does yoga really teach? What does it give to people?
It gives people the power to recognize the others in themselves, I think. I think it can bring about a sense of unity or oneness with nature, with the animals. I think it brings a new sensitivity to someone when they're a little bit more peaceful, a little bit less violent, a little bit more real, a little less clever, a little bit more generous, you know? Like the authentic yoga is like, brings peace to the planet, man. Sorry. I believe. Can I read you a Rumi poem to finish the interview?
That would be perfect.
Sweet. Let me grab my book.
Yeah.
The Sunrise Ruby. In the early morning hour, just before dawn, lover and beloved awake and take a drink of water. She asks, "Do you love me or yourself more? Really, tell the absolute truth." He says, "There's nothing left of me. I'm like a ruby held up to the sunrise. Is it still a stone or a world made of redness? It has no resistance to sunlight. This is how Halaj said, I am God, and told the truth. The ruby and the sunrise are one. Be courageous and discipline yourself. Completely become hearing and ear and wear this sun ruby as an earring. Work. Keep digging your well. Don't think about getting off from work. Water is there somewhere. Submit to a daily practice. Your loyalty to that is a ring on the door. Keep knocking, and the joy inside will eventually open a window and look out to see who is there."
That was Ryan Lear ending with a poem by the great Bhakta, the great devotee and poet Rumi. Is it still a stone or a world made of redness? It has no resistance to sunlight. So, the idea is that when a divinity fills us, then we become one in quality with it. Because actually, according to many traditions, many spiritual traditions, we are one in quality with the divine or with God. Currently listening to Shaman's Dream, aka Kay Colin and Dara Avis on this album, Curla Dream, who are also present at Wonderless Festival. This show is part two of a special of interviews and music from the festival, which happened in Whistler, BC a few weeks ago. I'm going to play a couple more public service announcements, and we're going to be back with a few words from the organizers, two of the organizers of Wonderless Festival, some closing words, and a track by Yusupa Sidibe, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing his name wrong, but it's not going to make the track any less good.
The Study and Go Abroad Fair, Canada's largest international university and student travel fair, is back in town. Another great opportunity to meet face-to-face with top universities from around the world to start planning your trip abroad. Exhibitors will be showcasing programs in law, medicine, health sciences, arts, and so much more. Mark Saturday, September 22nd on your calendar and come down to the Vancouver Convention Center. Doors open at 1 p.m., but come early at noon to catch our guest speaker. Check www.studyandgoabroad.com for more information and to pre-register online.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
This is CITR Radio in Vancouver, 1.9 FM. Show's called Mantra. The last interview that we have for the show today is going to be with two of the organizers. Last week we heard from Skylar Grant. This week we're hearing from the other two organizers. Sean Huss, whose name I'm sure I'm pronouncing wrong too, and also Jeff Krasno.
Bringing people together with who share a set of values. I mean, one of the things that, you know, I think you see happen a lot is that people come here, they'll hear a speaker or a lecturer, they'll discover something about themselves, and, you know, they're only here for 4 days out of 365. They take that home with them, and I think that that's really the most important part about it, is that when you come here and you something changes in yourself, or you realize something about yourself you didn't know before, or you learn something you hadn't learned before, you know, you take that home to your home community, and I hope that, you know, that this experience lives there and then grows in within each community.
I think that you know, in our parents' generation, there are these concepts of, like, yoga or organic food, or these things were, like, these hippie, like, lefty, like, you're doing yoga out in a field with a crystal or whatever. It was, like, really, really, like, left-of-center ideas. And I think what we've seen kind of in the last generation is that these concepts actually are very normal concepts, and they've grown more and more into the mainstream. You know, the idea of, like, taking care of the earth. Well, I think we've all learned, I hope that more and more of us are learning, that is not an extreme idea. That's actually a very mainstream idea. Eating food that's grown locally and is in season, that's actually a very old idea. that's an idea that predates going into the supermarket and just buying whatever. So, you know, it's sort of I think we're, as a culture, rediscovering and discovering that these ideas of cultivating personal spirituality, of practicing yoga, of buying organically, of consuming ethically, that these are actually very non-controversial mainstream concepts. And I think what we can do as, you know, festival producers is, you know, create large platform around those ideas. And then let what happens, happens, you know, let the people come, let them network, let them meet each other, let the kind of diaspora then go out and hopefully change the world in a positive way.
We kind of started to see the yoga community as not a community of people who are necessarily always practicing yoga, but they're actually practicing something perhaps a little higher than that, you know what I mean? And that's sort of where the mindfulness concept comes in. I mean, and that's really sort of, it became almost a metaphor for us. I mean, obviously yoga is the centerpiece, asana is still the centerpiece of the event, but the more we thought about it, the more we experienced it, we really realized, geez, you know, there's just a shared set of values that are very much in common with people who practice yoga, but also people who meditate, people who are, you know, I don't know, you can go down a list of, you know, activities. So,
you know, it's almost that we, like, that yoga is sort of the sticky magnet, you know, where it's like you can book a bunch of really great yoga teachers and get the word out and then people come. But then really once they get here, it's bigger than they came here maybe because they wanted to practice with a particular teacher or whatever. But then once they get here, it's sort of more, the other things that become more central are like the community bit or the lecture that they went to or the hike that they went on or, like, you know. And so I think in some ways, we've begun to use yoga as sort of a metaphor for a larger, you know, panoply of choices about how you live your life. And
I see that. Yeah. I mean, I was in a class yesterday where he was explaining that is what yoga is.
Yeah.
It's more about the principles than it is the actual asana.
Yeah, well, a lot of the teachers do actually spread that message, for sure. I also think that there's just something that people, you know, connectedness with people that you feel are like you and share your values is something that people are craving all over, at least the United States. I can't speak for Canada. I don't live here. But you know, it's like we're all stuck with our devices all the time, stuck on email, and there's so much. You have your friends, but you're so busy. And really, just the ability to go out, to be outdoors in a beautiful place and find yourself surrounded by people who share your goals and values and you have something in common with, it's sort of like the old, you know, it's sort of really a very traditional concept in a lot of ways. It's sort of more like, you know, back to what the town square might have been 100 years ago, when you go out and you'd know everyone in the community and you'd feel part of something. And I think, and in a weird way, that's, you know, even at a more abstract level, that's what's happened here. You know, people just gather and they're sort of shocked to find that they're not alone. There's a lot of people who are like them.
Sean Host and Jeff Krasno, two of the organizers of the Wanderlust Festival, which travels around North America for the past few summers this year, coming for the first time to Whistler, BC. Just in a personal way, I'd like to thank all the people that were involved in the festival and made such an amazing space and environment for some really remarkable things to happen. I also want to thank my partner for the festival, Sunil, who was a big help in just orchestrating everything and making it possible for us to go there and do the interviews and just take part in everything. And for the staff, who also helped us with various things. Last track is going to be Yusupa Sidi Bey. His name is probably not being pronounced correctly by me, with a wonderful track called Salam. He is a he was at Wanderlust Festival. He is affiliated with the Sufi tradition, hailing from Senegal in West Africa. Affiliated also with Bayefal, which is kind of a sect of the Sufi Islam. My understanding is that I was opposed to the idea of prayer and temple type of worship of God or of the Supreme. Bayefal, I believe, they're more about working in devotion, especially with like just very menial work, and using that as an expression of devotion. We'll be back next week for another installment of Mantra here on CATR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. If you have any questions about what we played or stuff on this show, you can send email to mantraradioshow@gmail.com. You can also send feedback and check out more about the show and previous shows for listening, for beholding, by going to mantraradio.co. See you next week. Take care of yourself. Until then, namaste.
Yongi nyan yalla je fal bay fal ye protege Yongi nyan yalla je fal bay fal ye protege Mam Sheikh waluno Bunyi dunak bunyi de bal Bunyi dunak bunyi de Bunyi dunak bunyi de bal Bunyi dunak bunyi de Mam Sheikh Imran Mam Sheikh Imran Fall